Demonstrators turned up outside the U.S. Capitol yesterday demanding Congress investigate the NSA's mass surveillance program.
It is time to roll back the surveillance state. It is time to restore the Fourth Amendment.
The Justice Department says it will use information gained from one of those government surveillance programs against a terror suspect arrested last year. More from Carlotta Bradley.
It would be the first time the Justice Department would offer into evidence intelligence gained from one of the National Security Agency's warrantless surveillance programs against a terror suspect heading to trial. The man accused allegedly provided material support to what authorities say is an Uzbek terror organization. Court papers say the FBI went to court and got email from two accounts he used and communications from his phone lines. Previous Supreme Court challenges to the warrantless program have been turned aside, but the majority decision in an opinion this year did suggest a way for a challenge to be heard. Carlotta Bradley, Washington.
I'm Tim McGuire.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Everybody get ready for Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. A foodie born and bred, my wife Nikki loves chatting up chefs, dining out, and insider industry buzz.
And my husband David thinks a great meal is nothing but a good burger, a frosty brew, and a chef for under $20. Because he is cheap.
Well, maybe so, but Foodie married Beast anyway, and together we've got the food and wine variety show that has everyone talking.
It's Foodie and the Beast, and we are on now.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. And I am not cheap, I'm careful.
Yeah.
We've got a.
That depends on how you look it up. Oops.
Let's air our dirty laundry elsewhere, shall
okay.
we?
Have at it.
Foodie. Mm-hmm. We got a jam packed show. Debbie Shore is with us. She's the co founder of Share Our Strength, which is a national organization that is totally focused on feeding kids who are hungry, which I love. And Jason Roberts is going to be joining us. He's the co host of The Chew. He's the colleague of Carla Hall.
Yeah, he's Metropolitan Cooking and Entertaining is coming here next week, and Jason Roberts will be there, and he'll be interviewed. All right, Nevin Martell's in studio. Nevin, are you interviewing him?
No, I have the great honor of doing my editor, Joe Yonan, next weekend.
Oh, okay, there you go.
A couple of other people.
All right, well, as I was saying, food writer Nevin Martell is in studio. He is the author of the new Founding Farmers Cookbook called, you guessed it, The Founding Farmer's Cookbook.
Clever name. How did you ever come up? Really, how much money did you make for thinking that up? That's what I want to know. That's a gig I want.
The research was extensive.
And Chris Copley's here. He's the communications manager for Food and Friends. And it's their annual pie fundraiser.
Slice of life.
Slice of life. I don't see no pies over there, Chris. What's up? And he's brought with him.
To be fresh. I'll bring them to you.
Lena Marmolejo and Marta Estarellas, who are pie ambassadors. They're, am I right? You're with the World Bank?
The Inter-American Development
Bank. Same thing, right. And, and they're out there trying to sell pies to help make money for Food and Friends. And
lastly, in studio, we have Karen Newman. She is a mixology expert and spirits editor for Wine Enthusiast. She's also author of the new book, Cocktails for a Crowd. Woohoo! We have a crowd in studio, and we are ready for some cocktails.
So I want to know right off the bat, what's it like to be the booze editor of a magazine dedicated to wine?
It's the best job.
Are you?
Like,
she's
are
like,
you,
I have the
wait,
best job.
No,
ever.
I want to know. Are you an outcast today?
No, but I get asked for a lot of recommendations on scotch and tequila. But I get to ask a lot of recommendations. I get to ask for what about the best champagne, things like that. So it all comes around.
So you're saying it's a very mutually beneficial
now,
relationship.
Now, wait a minute. I don't know much, but I know that champagne is actually wine. So why are they asking you about champagne?
No, I'm asking them.
No,
that.
She
oh, you're
them.
Asking them. I should listen to my own show.
Yes,
that's,
you should.
That's my problem.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit. How did you get into the cocktail scene?
Well, I've always been interested in food and culinary history. And when I started learning about wine and spirits, it was just one of those things that just grabbed me by the throat, just loved it so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had the opportunity to ask lots of professional bartenders and mixologists about how they get things done. So that really led to writing cocktails for a crowd.
Well, so, but the
so
mixology.
So you weren't drinking behind the school at 12 with a bottle of
no, and actually
Boone's
my,
Farm. And,
she's like, morning drinking's nothing to me.
We call it day drinking. It's much classier.
It's much better if you just stay up all night, actually.
That works
too. We've had a couple of mixologists who've come in who have definitely been up all night.
Yeah, you can usually smell. I mean, you can usually tell.
Yes. Well, mixology has changed drastically in the last 15 years in this country. So how have you seen it change given the kinds of things you're reporting on?
Well, I feel like drinks have gotten so much more interesting, not just the way that they're made, but the ingredients that we now have access to. It's incredible. The things you see on the back bar now, you wouldn't have seen them even 2 years ago, 5 years ago. We have access to such wonderful vermouths now, all kinds of artisan spirits, small batch gins and whiskeys. I'm thinking about every single state. I think just about every state has something, a spirit made in that state. I mean, you couldn't have said that 5 years ago. No way.
Right. No, we just had the guys from Catoctin Creek in here last week. And just in the last 4 years, the way they've grown is just, it's magnificent. Yeah, it's incredible. And they're doing such fun things that not only are their mainstays making such good money, that it also allows them to create interesting, like, craft products that they just want to get into.
I've given up making it in the bathtub. But that's really sort of the interesting thing is that, and again, I really am the outsider. I don't pay very good attention to anything. But what I've seen with these guys like Catoctin Creek and the other spirits folks who come in here is that they're doing a lot of what, like now, what the craft beer people were doing maybe 10, 15 years ago with experimenting with crazy kinds of ingredients that you would never expect to see in gin or in vermouth or, and I'm trying to remember, we had honey flavored gin that somebody brought in.
Mm-hmm.
Matt
was,
brought in. Yeah.
Yeah. That
awesome.
Was from,
I mean,
I don't have the name at the tip of my tongue, but, the guy from Granville Moore's,
Matt,
the bartender there, he brought in this honey gin. My God.
Yeah.
Was it Bar Creek maybe?
No, I have a picture of it. I'll find it. It's delicious.
I can't believe what people make into spirits now. I mean, I've seen vodkas made out of milk, out of grapes, out of apples, and the things I see going into gin and whiskey.
Drink your milk, honey. So let me ask a question, because I was looking through your book, and one of the problems when you have a party and you're the host is everybody wants a drink. You never get away from the bar. Was that the motivation? Is that what you saw writing cocktails for a crowd so you could mix up a whole punch bowl of
It stuff? Was definitely one of the inspirations. I am the worst in the world when it comes to this. I'll throw a party and I will literally sequester myself behind the bar the entire time and never leave because I want to make good cocktails and interesting cocktails. And I'll make them one at a time and then everyone gets their drink and I never leave. So it was
because once you're finished with the last one, you have to start again for the first one.
There you go. You know, it just never ends. But when I went to a cocktail conference called Tales of the Cocktail in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
If you've ever been, you'll see the bartenders there are making phenomenal drinks in enormous buckets. They're making them for 200 people at a time. I mean, if I'm making drinks for 10 people, it's not the same thing. But they were just as good as going to a bar and ordering one made for you right there on the spot. So I finally went to them and said, a couple of people I trusted. And I said, well, how do you do it? And how can I do it?
Mm-hmm.
And that was really part of the genesis for the book.
Well, it really speaks to me because, I mean, we have a fantastic bar in our house, but and we have all these fabulous people who come in studio who make great cocktails, but I'm really reticent to mix a cocktail for other people. I just wind up saying you can make your own cocktail or a born wine. You know, I'm always afraid that I'm just not going to make a good cocktail, but something like this that's written out so explicitly and that I can make in a large batch, it sort of eases that tension.
Finally, another use for the bathtub.
So tell us what you're pouring first.
Okay, I'm going to start off with Negronis.
Oh, yum. Mm.
And all of the drinks I brought today, there's so many different formats for making drinks in large batches, punches, pitchers. A lot of tiki drinks are perfect for a crowd, but I'm focusing on bottled drinks. So drinks that have all been made pre-batched, bottled. If you were doing this at home, you could certainly mix everything ahead of time and then set it in, say, a big galvanized container full of ice.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just Campari, gin, sweet vermouth. And usually it's not shaken, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Okay.
And it's a beautiful, glorious red color vibrant, beautiful, and easy to make. And I'm right now pouring out for, what, 8 people in the studio and not even breaking a sweat.
Okay. No, we will be once we drink that damn thing.
All right, well, while you're passing that around, we're going to bring in
Debbie Shore. And we've had lots of chefs on lots of times when they were doing a fundraiser for you for Share Our Strength.
Taste of the Nation
for one example. But we're really delighted to have you on because the whole story of Share Our Strength is really a mind blower. It's really, and I want you to tell it, but sure. Basically it came because you and your brother were having a conversation.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks for being for having me here. I'm really,
well, I'm
really
cheers.
Happy to be here this morning. Cheers. Let me take
maybe
a sip before
talk
I tell
for,
the story.
Or maybe right. not. You know.
This Share Our Strength was started really in response to an international crisis in Ethiopia, and I think the thought was that we wanted to start something that was a consistent and full-time response to a crisis instead of just, responding to a crisis. So Share Our Strength was really born out of a response to Ethiopia. Millions of kids were dying of hunger. And my brother came to me and said, you know, I want to do something that is permanent instead of reacting just once when we see news like this. And at the same time, we really believed that, chefs in our country would understand this and respond to this. It would resonate with them because they feed people for a living. This is now there's so many taste events, and chefs do so much in the community across a lot of different causes. But the one that I think they feel really connected to is one that feeds people and in particular feeds kids. And so, 28 years later, chefs are still responding, still upping their game to help make sure that no kid is hungry in America.
Well, you started an organization in response to a food crisis thousands of miles away, yeah. But the reality is there's one in our backyard.
That's right.
And that's what you're addressing.
That's right.
Now.
So shortly after we started, and we're still actually committed to some of our international work, but within, 4 to 6 weeks after starting, we recognized there was a hunger problem here at home. And today, in this country, we've got about 50 million Americans who live below the poverty line. Mm-hmm. Half of them are kids. Mm-hmm. 16 million kids struggle with their next meal, not sure where they're going to get their next meal. And so Share Our Strength started a campaign about 8 years called mm-hmm. No Kid Hungry.
Right.
And the beauty is that there's a solution. So, where some countries don't have the money or the food, to make sure the kids are eating. In this country, we've got the food. Kids aren't hungry because of a lack of food or right. programs or services. They're hungry often because they don't always have access. Mm-hmm. So our work is squarely focused on connecting kids to the food they need to live and to grow and to thrive.
Well, so let me ask you, in this 8 years that you've been focused on this, how has what you started doing evolved to what you're doing today? And what are some of the answers you see out there to eradicating this problem?
Right. So one of the things that we learned early on when we decided to, we got really tired of fighting hunger, and we decided that even though it sounds really bold, that mm-hmm. we're going to stop fighting it and stop decreasing it, but actually put a stake in the ground and say we're going to end child hunger. Mm-hmm. And what we learned was that there are programs already in place, paid for, authorized by, both Republicans and Democrats in this country to say it's really important for kids who live, below the poverty line to eat breakfast, lunch, dinner, and make sure they get summer meals. So what we realized is that a lot of those programs are not being realized. They're not being, kids aren't participating. They're available, but they're not participating. So one great example would be school breakfast. Mm-hmm. You got to have a healthy breakfast if you're going to get good grades, if you're going to stay in school, if you're not going to get, kids that don't eat breakfast get sick more often, their grades suffer, and so on. So we focused on school breakfast and understanding that even though breakfast is available in the cafeteria, kids don't always get it because they get to school too late. Mm-hmm. Or they're stigmatized. They feel embarrassed to go into the cafeteria sure. and wait in that line. So we started to work on getting breakfast served in the classroom. And if you can get it in first period, you see a huge increase in participation. And so that's a really big piece of our strategy.
How is that done? Are they just who wants breakfast and people just get it? Is it given to everybody and anybody who needs it? How do they deliver the food
right.
in,
so
during class?
There are a couple different things. One of them is called a grab and go. So some of the schools that we're working with in some of the states they have little carts mm-hmm. that when kids go up to the first period, they just grab a bagel and some fruit and some right. milk, and they go into their classroom. And for the first 15 minutes, while the class is getting ready, or maybe the teacher is still doing some instruction, the kids are eating. And it's universal. So any kid can grab that breakfast.
That's great.
And, you know, what we're finding is there was a, we did a study not too long ago where Deloitte came out and did a study and said, if you eat school breakfast, your test scores average 17.5% higher. So all of a sudden, this is important to teachers, you know, and school administrators.
All right. We want to continue talking with you, but we have to take a break. When we get back, we want to hear more about some of the things you're doing, both locally and nationally around the region. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a sec.
Autism. The Virginia Institute of Autism, or VIA, a nonprofit school and outpatient program, is looking for passionate professionals to provide a range of applied behavior, analytic assessment, and clinical services for children with autism spectrum disorders and related developmental disabilities within an hour radius of Charlottesville, Virginia. Potential BCBA supervisors, behavior technicians, and instructors should visit viaschool.org or call 434-923-8252.
If talking and texting interferes with a walk down the street, imagine what might happen if you're driving. Focus on the road, not your conversation. Your brain can't do both safely. No dialing, no talking, no texting to arrive safe.
Hi, I'm Brooke Delaney.
And I'm Congressman John Delaney.
As a teen, I know not to text while driving. My dad and I ask you to focus on the road, not your conversation.
This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
In today's competitive job market, imagine not having the reading skills needed to even fill out an application. 90,000 adults in D.C. are considered functionally illiterate. It takes a lot for an adult to admit they can't read. It takes even more courage to do something about it. The Washington Literacy Center teaches adult learners to read, giving them options and a bright future. Please give back to the community by donating today. Go to WashingtonLiteracyCenter.org and make your much-needed charitable contribution. Changing lives through literacy. WashingtonLiteracyCenter.org.
Are you interested in obtaining a patent or trademark? The United States Patent and Trademark Office and the District of Columbia Public Library are sponsoring a series of free workshops at the MLK Jr. Memorial Library, located at 901 G Street Northwest. These free workshops are open to the public on November 19th from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. Simultaneous sessions will cover patents, trademarks, or copyrights. To register, call 202-727-1161 or send an email to education@uspto.gov.
All right, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis, and Debbie Shore is in with us. She's co-founder of Share Our Strength, and it's an organization dedicated to making sure that hungry kids aren't hungry anymore, essentially. Look, you gave us a stat a few minutes ago that 16 million kids across this country are essentially hunger-challenged, and we throw away enough food in the U.S. to feed all the hungry children and adults, and, you know, there's so much waste. And there are organizations like DC Central Kitchen that are, you know, trying to solve the problem in their own way. How do we address that?
Yeah, well, you know, when I think about all the different services that kids need, I mean, for sure, we've got waste. And, you know, you named an organization. There are many like DC Central Kitchen that have popped up around the country. And salvaging good food, salvaging perishable food is certainly one way to provide food for kids and for families. And you know, the other way is to make sure that the programs that are in place in schools, one of the challenges we have in addition to school breakfast is during the summer.
Right.
So during
the
summer.
There was a huge article in the Post this summer about that, about getting kids who don't have any access to food without going to school, how they were getting meals to them during the summer.
Right. And schools used to be open during the summer, but they're not any longer for budget reasons. So we find, so here's one statistic that just blows me away. So lunch programs in our country, about 21 million American kids are eligible and receiving school lunch, free school lunch. Okay. Half of those kids get breakfast, only half, and they're all eligible.
Mm-hmm.
Only 3 million of those 21 get summer. So summertime.
Who's
is
feeding them? Like, where
really
are they getting their
spike.
Food?
That's right. So, you know, and the problem with summer meals is that for every, you know, 25 programs that open, and they're open, they're sponsored by groups like Boys and Girls Clubs,
sure.
And Parks and Rec Centers serve summer meals. And if you find places that have activities going, that's mm-hmm. a great place to serve a summer meal because, you know, the kids are, there's two reasons to go to that site, right? There's
right.
going to be a meal and there's going to be an activity. But because the schools are closed, we find that there's such a lack of awareness on the family's mm-hmm. part. They don't really know where to go. They don't even know that it exists. So we're doing a lot of work to do two things. Open more sites in the summer and then make sure families are aware.
Well, and the other
PSAs
key is,
and texting campaigns and so forth.
Well, I have to imagine dealing, you know, when you're dealing with families who are food insecure, that they have so many other
That's
issues
right.
that they're dealing
That's
with.
Right.
I mean, finances and things of that nature, that they must be so overwhelmed with all the things they need to do. So getting to
exactly.
them to let them know what's available, that's
right.
got to be one of your biggest obstacles.
It's a huge obstacle. So we've deployed things like canvassing, mm-hmm. and literally knocking on doors and letting families know that there's a summer meal site. And the summer meal site could be like two blocks away, and mm-hmm. they have no idea. They're not leafleting. There's no sign up.
Right.
So we're working with local agencies. Everything we do is really with partners. So we, you know, our strategy is contingent upon other partners in the state.
Well, the other
us.
Issue is particularly I'm involved with a group that's doing a lot of work in Ward 7. It's not just feeding them. It's feeding them healthy food because one of the problems with obesity and
Absolutely.
Obese kids is that they're eating crap, basically, you know, and, yeah. and it's going in purportedly as food, but it's really not doing their bodies any good.
Right. So hunger can be, you know, two sides of the same coin. Right.
Exactly.
So hunger versus obesity, and it's really malnourished. Right. On
well, because
side
I think there
coin.
Was a, you know, a long time ago, it was like, we just want to get them food. So
right.
it didn't matter if it was nutritious or if it provided the elements that they needed to survive healthily. And now, right. you know, eating non-nutritious food that's just high in calories is not
detrimental.
It's not
absolutely
good. Right.
So we have a program called Cooking Matters
mm-hmm.
that makes sure that families, and it's an educational piece, right? So it's a 6-week course mm-hmm. that we provide families that live below the poverty line that need this information around cooking skills, shopping skills, how to read unit pricing, how to prepare nutritious food on a fixed and low income.
Well, let me jump in because if we haven't turned on some of our listeners, then I'd be surprised. How can, we've got about 30 seconds, how can people get in touch with you and get involved?
Yeah, you can go right to nokidhungry.org mm-hmm. onto our site. There are lots of different ways, a lot of different levels of getting involved. We've got events that you can, you know, get involved in with Taste the Nation. We've got all kinds of No Kid Hungry activities. We've got a bake sale coming up in the fall that
right.
people every fall that people get involved in.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just a host of ways. You can sign the pledge. The first thing you do is go onto our site and sign the pledge to end child hunger. And that will take you to a number of activities to get involved in. So please do it.
All right. Well, Debbie Short, you're doing great work.
Thank you.
Your brother's
sure,
doing
right.
great work.
Thanks
Thank
for
you.
Coming
Thanks.
In.
Thanks for having me.
Finally got
All
you
right.
in here.
Great.
Thank you.
All right, so we're
going to
switch subjects. Jason, are you on the phone?
I am, but hey, I'm a No Kid Hungry chef. I'm so excited you guys are talking.
Oh,
Jason Roberts is one of your chefs.
Absolutely.
Right. There you go. That's all right. Boy, get those plugs in, man. That's what I say. So Jason is one of the hosts of ABC's The Chew with our friend Carla Hall, who's from D.C. and has been on the show a bunch of times. And you're coming into D.C. next weekend for the Metro Cooking and Entertaining Show Saturday
yeah,
and Sunday.
I certainly am.
Are you going to be here both days for the show, Jason?
I am both days, and I'll certainly be sticking around for a couple of days there. I want to hit up 14th Street because I know.
Oh, my God.
We were just talking 14th Street in studio.
It's going to blow your mind.
The guys there at Church Key and Birch and Barley, I love what they do there. The Sunday when they do that glazed donut with the fried chicken.
Right. Oh, the Luther.
All right,
you
I'm
going to
ask
Luther.
A favor. Wait. I want to ask a favor. When you go into Birch and Barley, ask for Sam Nellis to be
son.
Your waiter. He's in there. And beat the crap out of him. I want to. All right, so we want to talk about what you're going to be doing at the show, but you're involved in a lot of things, and I really wanted to get at that, if we could, for a couple of yep. minutes first. You're a long-time supporter of an operation called Opal that teaches families yeah. in underserved areas how to cook healthy foods, and we're really, it's a
Which
great...
Which just piggybacks
yeah.
on what we were just talking about.
And
100%, yep.
How'd you get involved in that? Where'd all that heart come from?
I guess going back to say 2000 when Jamie Oliver hit the scene in Australia. You know, Australia was looking for their Jamie Oliver, and I guess my background in cooking was all classical French, but I had somewhat transitioned through doing a television show into healthier lifestyle, eating well, more family orientated, everyone eating around the table. So it was quite a natural transition. The local and federal government in Australia had reached out to me with a project called OPAL, Obesity Prevention and Lifestyle, and was about traveling and touring underprivileged schools and encouraging, I guess, the benefits of eating well and eating healthy. And everything that you guys were just talking about with Debbie Shaw there, and the importance, I guess, of things like cooking matters and teaching people the right values. Because you're right, you're 100% right when it comes to food. Sure, we can give children food, but we need to give them the right food. Because at the moment, we're producing dumb fat kids. You know, because they're not finishing school, they're eating the wrong food. If you look back, say, 15, 16, 17 years ago through the hybridization of wheat, corn, soy, and we're now eating products that our body doesn't recognize. So we're really putting on the weight and we're not getting the benefits of eating good food. So that's the reason I really jumped on board with OPAL. And for the same reason, I'm a big fan of No Kid Hungry and everything that they do.
Well, so, but gluten-free healthy eating is very important to you. How did you jump on the gluten-free bandwagon?
Well, fundamentally, I think it was this time last year when we were hit by Hurricane Sandy.
Right.
And where I was living in Jersey City, you know, we lost power for 10, 12 days. And down underneath me, there's a restaurant called BB3. And in hindsight, one of the chefs who works there is going to be in D.C. as well, Michael Coletti. We were eating pizzas and drinking beer because there was no power. They had their ovens would work. They didn't need the power for that. They were, brick ovens.
Mm-hmm.
And I just ate lots of pizza and lots of beer. I finished filming a show with Ming Tsai, and I looked back at the tape and I thought, oh, my God, look how fat I am.
Oh, I just did that in the mirror this morning.
I mean, that's every day of my husband's life. Go ahead.
Quiet.
I had one of those moments. I had a metrosexual moment where I looked in the mirror and thought, I'm way too fat right now. And I'd always knew that I had an issue with wheat, or I felt, that some digestive problems with it. I felt heavier in my large intestine. I get red around my sinus areas, tired, lethargic, bad memory. And I thought,
it sounds like you were pretty attractive at that point, Jason.
So hot, Dave. So hot, man. So I dropped the wheat. I dropped the wheat, and then really started reading up on it. And there's a wonderful book called Wheat Belly that I read, and it triggered a whole lot of things for me and realized how poisonous wheat. And it wasn't so much the wheat. It was the fact that we'd actually changed what wheat was by hybridizing it. And it's not just the wheat. It's the gluten and it's the gliadin. You know, it's the proteins in wheat that our body aren't recognizing now. So,
are you going to be talking about that at Metro Cooking?
And entertaining?
Interestingly enough, the last show that I did for Metro was in, I think it was in Dallas, and my whole menu was gluten-free, but I wasn't going to say anything, and I wasn't going to go down the road of, bagging gluten by any means, because people still need to eat, and people enjoy their breads and pastas and things like that, so I didn't want to be that guy, but I did ask the question, so I can stand up here on stage and cook wonderful, simple food for you guys, or I can actually teach you a little bit about it and the importance of eating well, and they really wanted to know, because most of the time when you go to these shows, the first few rows of them, certainly throughout the Midwest, people are morbidly obese and they're on those little carts and they've got gas tanks and oxygen masks and things like that. And so,
I mean, it's not funny. It's not funny, but it's true.
It's awful.
True. It's true.
Right.
I know it sounds so.
It's the last cooking demo you'll ever attend. That's it.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe it. But people seriously wanted to know, so I gave a full demonstration and talked about the benefits of eating well and what gluten's doing, and people stayed, not walked out this time. It was interesting.
Well, all right, so I want to jump in and make sure that people understand, know what time they can find you there too, because you're only there, you're not there all day every day, correct?
No, I will be about, but there's a lot of chefs to get through. So I know I'm doing a spot on Saturday and a spot on Sunday.
All right, and I just want to make sure people know that's a Metropolitan Cooking and Entertaining show on the 2nd and 3rd, Saturday and Sunday, at the Convention Center. I know that there are still some tickets available at metrocookingdc.com. I want to make sure people know that. And Jason, you're a blast on the chew. You know that?
I like to have
I'll tell you, Carla speaks highly. Carla speaks highly of you behind your back. I want you to know that.
Oh, and I absolutely adore Carla. Actually, the first time I met Carla was at a Metro Food Show in DC some years ago.
Really?
Oh, really? She's so wonderful.
She was on the floor. I don't even think she was on a stage. She was, very humble beginnings for her, and to see where she's gone now is amazing. She always speaks highly of DC and the food scene in DC. I think she was the one that put me onto Ben's Chili Bowl.
That makes sense. Well, listen, when you come down next week, I'll give you a whole bunch of restaurants that you have to hit because there's so many good things going on down here.
Well, tell me, is Blue Jacket opened yet?
Yes.
Yes, it opens on Tuesday.
I was there the first two nights.
It's, well, I heard there's 500, is it like, they've got like 500 beers or something?
Well, 500 beers is at Birch and Barley, but they are now brewing their own beers over at Blue Jacket.
They've got 19 huge, I don't know what they're called, vats, and it'll blow your mind when you see this place.
Well, I think I'm there for four nights. I think I want to try and hit up B2 as well, so I'm definitely keen to come to check a few restaurants.
I will send you a list of places that you must hit.
All right, Jason, thanks for joining us. Best of luck next week.
Okay. All right, we'll see you guys on Twitter.
All right, see you. Thanks so much. All right, Kara.
No.
No?
Commercial.
Oh, we're going to go to commercial, and then we're going to go to Kara. All right, because I want my booze. This is David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast. We're going to be doing cocktails for a crowd when we come back.
In moments of grief, broadcasters come through, even when all else fails. Today, with more ways than ever to experience the moments that transform our lives, Americans still choose broadcast radio and television more than all other media combined. We are the local broadcasters of radio and television, reaching more people, touching more lives. Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Soldiers returning with traumatic brain injuries or other serious battle wounds often spend weeks or months in a VA hospital or other rehab facility. DVDs for Vets is collecting DVDs and portable players for distribution in our community and nationwide. Many of us take for granted our access to everyday enjoyments, and DVDs for Vets needs your help in giving these injured soldiers some diversions from the monotony of a hospital stay during recovery. To donate new or used DVDs or to learn more about this worthy cause, please go to www.dvdsforvets.org.
Signs, so subtle we may not notice them. Signs like loss of interest in activities. Signs like insomnia, fatigue, or withdrawing from friends.
Hey, dear, come play cards with us.
Even talking about wanting to die. These are signs of depression.
Hi, my name is Smitty. My husband, Congressman Jerry Connolly, and I urge you to take signs of depression seriously. Let your loved one know you care, then seek help from a doctor or mental health professional.
Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Hey, Mom, why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why is an 11 pronounced 1T1?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is pizza round?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. Kara, I'm going to be a...
Kara, what did you pour?
Well, first of all, we're with Kara Newman, who is the spirits editor at Wine Enthusiast, which is enough of an oxymoron, but she's the author of Cocktails for...
You keep saying that, and that's
well,
not
because
true.
It's, it is to me.
Okay.
And Cocktails for a Crowd.
True.
You're talking? Cocktails for a Crowd. I'm trying to sell this book.
Okay.
Cocktails for a Crowd, which is a great book about how to basically prepare tasteful batches of these drinks so that a host is not stuck behind the bar doing drinks individually, which I think is a great idea.
I agree.
So, all what right, are we
Kara,
drinking?
What do we got next?
Good Lord.
You are drinking a Japanese cocktail, and it has
Domo
no...
arigato.
The more I pour, the better your Japanese sounds.
I can say that in Wakarimasu Toranaga-sama, which comes from Shogun. That means whatever you want, Mr. Toranaga. Thank you.
There's your Japanese lesson for the day.
That's it.
And moving on.
So what's in here?
No Japanese ingredients whatsoever. It was created to celebrate the arrival of the Japanese ambassador to the U.S. in the late 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
But it is made primarily
before Pearl Harbor. Right, yeah.
Okay. Cognac is the number one ingredient in there.
Spoken like a true baby boomer. Go ahead.
It's very dynamic. It's all good.
Welcome.
It's primarily cognac. That's the number one ingredient in there. There's orgeat, which is an almond syrup, and it's what makes it smell so lovely, and Angostura bitters, which gives it a bit of spice. And I also add in water just to approximate the dilution effect you would get if you were stirring it with ice or shaking it with ice.
Okay. So when you have people coming over or when somebody's doing a party, do you advise like making these cocktails in advance and then like you have them in bottles here? Is that a
yes.
nice, it's a kind of interesting way to serve them.
There's so many beautiful decorative bottles, too. I maybe shouldn't say, but I'm actually recycling the bottles that the booze actually came in.
That's very green.
No, I like that. I think that's a really good idea.
But there are lots of houseware stores that have really gorgeous bottles with resealable tops, and you can display all the gorgeous colors of your drinks all together side by side. One's maybe a little yellow, one's maybe a little red, one's maybe a little amber hue. Hmm. And it could be really beautiful, like a jewel box.
That's such a good idea. All right, when we come back, we want to hear more about different ways to serve these kinds of cocktails at
parties. Right, we're going to go to another group that does good in our area. Yes. Chris Copley's, you're not our Alex Baldwin, but you're getting close. He's on every year. He's the communications manager for Food and Friends, which is a great organization that delivers freshly prepared meals to folks who are suffering from serious illnesses, and it's like thousands of meals.
Yeah. I don't even need to be here. You know us.
I know your story.
Well,
why don't you just leave? Leave these two gorgeous women here. That'll be fine,
right?
But for people who don't know, and I mean, I've been out to Food and Friends. It's such a incredible, impressive facility. Can you just give people the 411 on what it is and what you guys do?
Absolutely. First, thank you for having us. It's always a great time to be here early morning with some cocktails and yeah. great company.
We know why you're here.
I'm
in a self-bias.
You're not fooling anybody.
Food and Friends, we're a nonprofit organization. We deliver meals, healthy, nutritious meals to people that are living with HIV, AIDS, cancer, and other life-challenging illnesses. We have a team of registered dietitians on our staff that work with our trained chefs to create specialized meals for our clients that are suffering or facing these really, really awful illnesses.
And how many meals are you guys delivering a day?
We deliver more than more than a million meals to about nearly 3,000 people. And this is our 25th year anniversary, so we're super excited to be celebrating that this year. And in 25 years, we've delivered more than 16 million meals.
Wow. It's so amazing.
So we've done some amazing work in the community. We started as a response to the HIV/AIDS epidemic in the 80s, and now we're serving that population as well as cancer.
Speaking of amazing, this year is the 7th annual Slice of Life.
Slice of Life pie, yes.
So
we're here
basically
to talk about pies.
They get great pies, and they sell them to make
money
for the organization.
Yeah, Baguette Republic.
Right.
We'll be working with them again this year.
And so what's the process? Tell us. So you buy a pie, you give a pie. How does it work?
Yeah, the theme of today is it's easy as pie. Everything that I'm going to ask you to do is extremely easy.
How did you ever think that?
I know, right? It's pretty clever. It's easy. Go to foodandfriends.org/pie. Mm-hmm. Click a couple links and you'll be able to buy apple pie, pumpkin pie, pecan pie. In the South, it's pecan pie.
Mm-hmm.
We have United U.S. Airways.
Where are you going with that, Chris?
No, that's how I say it, but I get made fun of every time I say it, pecan. And we have a U.S. Airways pie. You go on our website,
The
pie.
Only the effete. You know, aristocrats say pecan.
Wait. Can we go U.S. Airways? Why are we calling it a U.S. Airways? It's
so
a cherry pie.
Yeah, they're a huge supporter of ours. And anybody that purchases that pie, they're going to be entered to win a $1,200 U.S. Airways gift card.
All right.
Oh.
Well, let me talk about how they're sold out there in the community. We have Lina Marmolejo and Marta Estarellas who are with us, and they are pie ambassadors. It's not like being the ambassador to Luxembourg, I guess, but it's still a good thing. Tell us what you guys do to be pie ambassadors.
Well, actually, we're from the Inter-American Development Bank, and we have been supporting. We have a community relations program at the IDB, which has been around for 15 years, supporting actually community-based organizations that provide services to the Latino community. And Food and Friends actually is one of them, and we're very, very grateful to be working in partnership with Food and Friends actually to reach out to the Latino community living with HIV, AIDS, cancer, and other illnesses. So since 2007, actually, Food and Friends came to us, and we started providing some support to them. And one of the supports, we provide grants. We provide the surplus equipment property of the bank, actually. They have received some. We have a couple of drives during the year, and they are recipients of those drives. So one of them actually is a Slice of Life campaign. And so we started actually to sell pies for Food and Friends since 2007. And internally, what we do, we have almost 3,000 staff at the bank at the at our headquarters, actually here in Washington D.C. So we are actually what we do is Lena is the team leader of that campaign, so she can actually talk more about it.
So she's what a volunteer. Do you do, Lena? You walk around and go buy a pie?
What are you doing, Lena?
Almost. But what we do is that as part of a HIV campaign, we have a HIV campaign each year. So we started incorporating the slice of life pie selling within that campaign. Mm-hmm. So what we do is we buy some samples from Food and Friends, and then during a lunch break, we give out samples to people during 3 or 4 days, and then they actually get to purchase the pie, and then we deliver it in November for Thanksgiving. So they either buy it or they can donate it for a family or for a neighborhood in need. Since we started back in 2007, we have been increasing the sales a lot. So we started for like, with, I don't know, like 60 pies, 40 pies. And now this year we are selling almost 160 pies.
That's great.
Only in 3 days. So it's good.
Well, let's talk about Chris. Here's your list. By the way, I'm not holding it against you that this year you didn't bring any pies, but next year I better see some pie on my plate here, man. You are out.
We're going to
be fresh, though.
But what does it mean? So for people who don't understand the concept, what does it mean when they buy the pies? It's not just buying a pie for yourself. How do you make it all work?
Yeah, so all of the funds that are raised through Slice of Life are going to support our services. So every pie that is purchased, it equates to about a meal, a day's worth of meals for one of our clients. So,
So it's a tax-deductible donation that's 100% out there. Great. That's
okay.
Good.
And then... I'm sorry, go ahead.
And also, so if you're not local or if you don't like pie, which I don't know who doesn't like pie.
Who don't like pie?
Who don't like pie. But if you can still make a difference. So you can buy a pie for a Food and Friends client, and that pie will be delivered to the client on Thanksgiving Day. Because on Thanksgiving, we deliver full Thanksgiving meals to our clients with enough food to feed 4 people. So we allow them to host friends and family on Thanksgiving. So you can buy a pie, and that will be delivered with.
Delivered as well.
And is it true that pie are square?
No. I have no idea.
I think he says that every year.
Well, I've never gotten the answer.
I was a communication major, not an
that's right.
Major.
History. That's why I don't know.
Aside from Slice of Life, what other ways can people, you know, the holiday seasons are coming up, and this is when people are at their most generous, not just financially, but also with being a volunteer. What are other ways that people can get involved with Food and Friends now as the holiday season is coming up?
Absolutely. Well, giving back is as easy as pie as well. So you can volunteer with us. We are always needing volunteers to help us in the kitchen, to help us portion and prepare and pack the meals. We're always looking for people to help us deliver these meals. So you just take your own car and take 5 to 6 deliveries and deliver them straight to a client. So and then... Of course, you can always donate to Food and Friends.
Well, that's what a great segue. Foodandfriends.org. If you can't spell it, you got a problem out there, world. But that's a great way to get involved. And Nick's been down and toured the kitchen.
I've worked in the kitchen. I mean, I've done it. I know. Yeah.
You don't want me in the kitchen. You want me washing your dishes. You don't want me.
Well,
in the kitchen.
We can have you doing
I'm
that.
Sure,
as well.
I'm sure you can.
No, it's the volunteers you have working there and the people you have working in the kitchen and who helped shepherd all the other volunteers. It's such an incredible organization. It was really inspiring being there.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, the work that we do is really made possible by volunteers and by organizations like Inter-American Development Bank, because without them, we're not going to be able to sell these pies to raise money for our services. But they're also volunteering in the community at Food and Friends. They're in our kitchen delivering meals. And
well, that's what I was going to say. Lena and Marty, you get special props for doing it for really out of the goodness of your heart. So congratulations to you, Chris.
Thank you.
Sell a lot of pies.
Thank you so much.
Try to find out about whether or not they're round or something else.
Foodandfriends.org/pie.
All right.
Get that plug in. Now, we're going to segue to our buddy Nevin Martell, who is the author of the new Founding Farmers Cookbook. Nevin, step up to the plate.
Absolutely.
Well, most people in the food community in D.C. know who Nevin Martell is. He's a local writer, a local food personality. He's around town.
Streaker.
Personality, gosh. I'm going to put that on my resume.
Right. Let's not spread rumors, okay? But so your biggest accomplishment as of late, other than having a child, is
Yes.
This recent book. So tell us a little bit about it.
So the Founding Farmers Cookbook, officially out on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And
the same day the Blue Jacket opens.
Yeah.
How fortuitous.
Coinkadink.
Yes.
And it's been a really fantastic project. We've been working on it for the last year. And it includes the greatest hits from the restaurant. So it's kind of like all the kind of great, comforting classics from around the country that mm-hmm. Chef Joe Goetz, who I worked on the cookbook with, has kind of chefed up. Put his spin on and added a little bit of philosophy, a little dash of philosophy too. And it's a really, I'm not a great cook. I'm a pretty all right, okay sometimes writer, but I'm not a great cook. And these recipes for me are great because I've been able to kind of pull them off in my own kitchen. And you know,
just, what?
I know. Well, you know, you say that, but you should have seen the turkey I did last year. That was a disaster.
Came out looking like a squab. Is that?
We have to take a quick break, but when we come back, I want to talk about sort of what's behind Founding Farmers. Mm-hmm. I mean, it has a very interesting history, and that, of course, relates to the kind of recipes that they're cooking at the restaurant and that you have in the book. So
absolutely.
We'll take a quick break. When we come back, this is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We are finding farmers at Founding Farmers. What do you think?
I think that was terrible.
Yeah.
Can I just point out before we go to commercial, I'm the comedian here. Thank you.
We'll be back in just a sec.
The odds of becoming a signed artist and having 3 number one albums? 1 in 100 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of this performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs.
The Virginia Institute of Autism, or VIA, a nonprofit school and outpatient program, is looking for passionate professionals to provide a range of applied behavior, analytic assessment, and clinical services for children with autism spectrum disorders and related developmental disabilities within an hour radius of Charlottesville, Virginia. Potential BCBA supervisors, behavior technicians, and instructors should visit viaschool.org or call 434-923-8252.
If talking and texting interferes with a walk down the street, imagine what might happen if you're driving. Focus on the road, not your conversation. Your brain can't do both safely. No dialing, no talking, no texting to arrive safe.
Hi, I'm Brooke Delaney.
And I'm Congressman John Delaney.
As a teen, I know not to text while driving. My dad and I ask you to focus on the road, not your conversation.
This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
In today's competitive job market, imagine not having the reading skills needed to even fill out an application. 90,000 adults in D.C. are considered functionally illiterate. It takes a lot for an adult to admit they can't read. It takes even more courage to do something about it. The Washington Literacy Center teaches adult learners to read, giving them options and a bright future. Please give back to the community by donating today. Go to WashingtonLiteracyCenter.org and make your much-needed charitable contribution. Changing lives through literacy. WashingtonLiteracyCenter.org.
Welcome back to Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. Before we get back to Nevin Martell and the Founding Farmers Cookbook, I just want to thank the folks that step up to the plate and make this show possible. Our very good friends at Neighborhood Restaurant Group, that's the brand new Blue Jacket, the soon-to-be brand-new Iron Gate, Rustico, the two Rusticos, Evening Star, Tallulah, mm-hmm. Vermilion, Buzz Bakery. There's a new Buzz Bakery coming next door to Blue Jacket. Mm-hmm. Columbia Firehouse, Birch and Barley, and Church Key. Also our friends at Founding Farmers, Farmers, Fishers, and Baker down on the Georgetown Harbor, mm-hmm. Union Market, Black's, Early Mountain Vineyard, Carpenter Shelter, the American Lamb Board, and the Virginia Wine Board. We got a smorgasbord there.
Yeah.
So Nevin, back to you. What's the story on, I mean, we know the story, but tell everybody the story on Founding Farmers.
Sure. So Founding Farmers is part owned by the North Dakota Farmers Union. And so it's a real farmer-owned proposition from the bottom of the chain to the top of it. And the idea is that they wanted to have a bigger bite of the food dollar because farmers get the least amount of money mm-hmm. when it comes to the food dollar. And it's the person at the end of the chain that makes all the money. So they thought, wouldn't it be interesting if we could flip that around and be at both ends of the proposition? And so Founding Farmers opened up a few years back and has been, you know, an amazing success since it opened. You know, it's the number one booked restaurant in the country on OpenTable. And, you know, it's won accolades galore.
Mm-hmm. The one in Montgomery County in Potomac is
it's crushed.
Like, yeah.
2 hour wait on a Friday night.
It's fantastic. And I mean, Farmers, Fishers, Bakers, the Sisters restaurant is,
down
you know,
harbor.
Just down on the harbor. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Going balls to the wall. Mm-hmm. JML's going to kill
it's
me.
It's a family show.
Yeah. Okay. But no, it's a great restaurant, and the philosophy really plays into it. You know, a lot of the producers that they work with, like there's Durham wheat from North Dakota in everything mm-hmm. that we make. You know, a lot of the small producers that we use are the ones that we feature on the restaurant menu. And it's, you know, it's the kind of restaurant you walk into, you see something that you recognize on the menu, and there's a great story behind it, and there's some really good philosophy driving
it. Well, what's the story on these recipes?
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Yeah. I mean, how did you take sort of the story of the restaurants mm-hmm. and the product that they're using and mm-hmm. then translate that into the book? Like, what were you looking for as you were writing it?
That's a much better sure. question than mine.
Well, you know, the great thing about Founding Farmers is that there's so many entry points mm-hmm. as a storyteller. I mean, you know, they did a lot of historical research into some of the regional favorites that are in the book. Chef Joe, who I worked with closely, you know, he has a huge backstory. And, you know, he has done so much research. And, you know, like the fried chicken, for example, went through like 30 iterations mm-hmm. before he got it exactly right. And, you know, plus there's the philosophy of the restaurant to kind of round into it. So for me, or the ingredients, the seasonality, I mean, for me, it was kind of hard sometimes to write just a basic recipe intro because I had so many different things that I wanted to say about it. And, you know, you're trying to pick just the best one and make sure there's a nice variety throughout.
How do I love the let me count the
Well, so since you said you're not the best chef in the kitchen, mm-hmm. as you were working on the recipes, what are some you're going back to over and over again?
Okay. I just made the peach blueberry cobbler.
Well, right, which you recommended to me to make. Yes.
And, you know, that's one that I felt very comfortable doing. Okay. It, you know, it's a crisp. You know, mm-hmm. you get your fruit ready, you get the topping ready, you put them both together in the skillet, and you put it in the oven for a little bit. That was super easy for me. And that was one that I've already done, like, I think 3 times now. Mm-hmm. The bacon lollies, which are a favorite at the restaurant.
Right.
Those are super easy to do at home. And, it, you know, again, I'm not the greatest cook in the world, but it's kind of a no-fail recipe, mm-hmm. even for a guy
what
like
about
me.
On the, other than the, like, what about main dish side? Like, what did you gravitate to?
I gravitated towards the holiday section because mm-hmm. I'm a big holiday guy. And now that we have a kid this year, I'm fully in charge of Thanksgiving and Christmas when it comes to the cooking.
Okay.
My wife's like, I'll take care of the baby. You take care of the kitchen. And
God, that's amazing because I did both.
Wow. Any chance she has, you know, David, just to like, just
I just want, no,
digs
no, I just
in,
want
huh?
to say that I'm thinking
I mean,
of one of,
say for the record.
One of those 7 words you're not allowed to say.
I mean,
yeah. No, you know, there's a lot like the cornbread stuff.
How are you getting home? That's the question.
I don't have to go home.
I know,
that's also
I know.
Amazing.
The love you two share is just wonderful to watch. Yeah. No, cornbread stuffing's fantastic. You know, you make the cornbread from scratch. Then you take the leftover cornbread, you make the stuffing, which is a staple at the restaurant. That's great. The turkey recipe for Thanksgiving is you know, it, you know, it still takes time because there's brining, but mm-hmm. it's an easy enough process, even for someone like me.
All right, we've got about one more minute. I can't.
You got a bunch
I
of book signings.
Teed you up for
yes.
that. Yeah, book signings.
Absolutely.
I love it when it's easy.
So next weekend, Chef Joe and I will be at the Metro Cooking Show. Mm. We'll be doing signings on both days, and Chef Joe will be doing a demo in the pavilion.
Metro
and you're
cooking
interviewing.
And right?
I'm interviewing. Joe Yonan and others in the Conversation Lounge.
Great.
And then the following 2 weeks, there'll be book signings at each of the restaurants, each of the 3 restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
And then the following week after that, we'll be at Now and Then in Tacoma Park,
fabulous.
Which is a cute little gift shop. They're fantastic.
Darling.
So.
Okay, well, we have all your book signings on the list, areyouon.com. So.
You totally rock. We love
know,
you for that.
We know
thank
the,
you.
Where you are. Okay, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's been
and
a real
where
pleasure.
Can people find
you
the
can
book
pick
as
up.
Of Tuesday?
As of Tuesday, you can pick it up in any 3 of the restaurant locations.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy it online through the restaurant and in fine bookstores everywhere.
Okay.
All
terrific.
Right.
Thank
Let's
you,
go
Nevin.
Back
Thanks
to Kara Newman. Kara?
Kara, I'm almost afraid to ask what you're pouring last.
It's a cocktail called the Bobby Burns.
Okay.
And it's made with scotch.
Okay.
So it's your...
And what's the history of the drink?
Robert
it is
Burns.
Named it is named for Robert Burns. And I love that Robert Burns Day is in January. So after you're done with Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year's, there's yet another boozy holiday to look forward
is this
to
a drink
in January.
For people who actually
kidding,
know who
Halloween,
Robert Burns
I was
going
to say Halloween's on Wednesday.
I mean, if you'd like to do the honors.
What, that Halloween's on
no,
Wednesday?
No, Robert Burns.
No, we're running out of time for Robert Burns history, but you can look him up. You can Google him.
Okay.
I got her.
I'd rather talk about what's in the drink.
Yeah, let's hear it. There you go.
It's scotch, vermouth, Benedictine, which is
Good
a lovely
Lord.
Herbal liqueur. and a little water.
It's good.
But this is yummy.
Oof.
Yeah. I mean, it's delicious for all that. Sometimes you hear all these different liquors are going to be in drinks, and you think it's going to be really strong and hard to drink. Like the last drink was really